every day, I think. You've survived another day.
Not an awful lot of people choose to live on the side of a road in a caravan or a van. Most of them have been forced into it one way or another.
I think your child dying is probably about the worst thing that can happen to you.
A lot of those are parked up by the side of the road. That can cause some community tensions.
It's just not acceptable. None of this is acceptable.
Anybody that says, oh, you shouldn't be living like that, then, okay, well, buy us a nice piece of land, or donate us a house, or shut your mouth.
These wide-open fields are meant to be the attraction, but it's not the view that's catching people's eye. Vans line this Bristol beauty spot, and their numbers are growing. The Downs is a popular place to visit, except these visitors never left. But why? These are the van dwellers. It's a damp day in Bristol, and looking down this road, the view seems endless. For months now, these mobile vehicles have become very much fixed. Some we find in a state of disrepair.
This area in Bristol is one of many areas now across the country where people are actually living inside vans, calling the curbside their home. There are about 600 people who are now living inside vans here in Bristol, and the numbers have got so big, the council's now taking legal action against them. But why, you might ask, are they living inside vans? Well, for some, it's a lifestyle choice, but for others, it's a symptom of a national housing shortage.
As we head towards the centre of town, the view is unchanged. Hundreds of vans and caravans are stationed across this city, now dubbed the vehicle-dwelling capital of the UK. Wherever you are, these homes are permanent. Mattresses, bikes and solar panels a frequent sight. 26-year-old Jack has lived on the Downs for about a year. A former education worker, this caravan became home.
The main thing for me was sort of leaving my job and then having to leave my accommodation where I was renting. And this was sort of the only thing I could afford going into that. I would have been 25 when that was, but I didn't have a wealth of savings built up because I'd just sort of been renting and all my money would pretty much go to that and food. I just needed somewhere to stay. I mean, the alternative to buying this would have been just sort of being homeless around the United Kingdom. If you think about it, I'm kind of on the ladder now. I actually have something I own. I have something I can improve.
A short walk down the road is Jack's dad. His van doors are open despite the incoming rain. Inside, Dave prepares roast lamb, a big dish quite unexpected in such a small setting. The power required to cook it, we spot, is carefully monitored.
I bought my first van with a view to make converting it into a weekend camper that I could go away for weekends. And then work sort of dried up and I couldn't afford to pay the rent. So I ended up moving into that van before it was even converted, in fact.
So for you, you moved into a van because of housing costs?
It's not just the rent, it's the rent, the council tax, all the bills and standing charges, and they just seem to, just increase dramatically. I didn't have any choice but to move out. Not an awful lot of people choose to live on the side of a road in a caravan or a van for fun, you know. Most of them have been forced into it one way or another.
The numbers of vans in Bristol are counted twice a year, and numbers have quadrupled since 2019. And curbside living specifically in the last 6 months has dramatically increased, with vehicles at 107 different locations. Describe the scale of the problem here.
So we've got over 600 lived-in vehicles in Bristol.
And it's this that's forced the council to act.
We think that the rise in vehicle dwelling is absolutely being driven by the housing crisis here in Bristol and elsewhere across the country. We found that people were using parts of the Downs as a kind of makeshift toilet. And obviously, that's completely unacceptable. We couldn't allow that to happen. So we've done a few things in response to that. First of all, obviously, we've cleaned the place up, made sure that it's safe And we're going to court now to bring in an injunction which would prevent people from parking up and living on the roadside up on the Downs.
This was a process started at the end of last year. We saw council enforcement staff knocking on the vehicles to say, you have to leave. Plastic wallets stuck to doors, their message hard to miss. And this is one of the sites their inhabitants could move to. An old gasworks, its concrete zones now fenced off.
We're setting up what we call meanwhile sites. This is one of them. We're going to be laying out some pitches on here and providing some basic facilities so that people can move away from the side of the road onto a safe, secure site where they've got some of the basic amenities that they need.
Do you have space on these sites for all 600-odd van dwellers?
Not for everybody, no.
It means everyone inside these vans faces eviction, but possibly without somewhere to go.
It's very difficult. I don't know where I'd go that if I got moved on.
The homelessness charity Crisis says that 40% of people who've recently been homeless had slept in a car, van or boat at some point during that time.
But there's remarkably little known about how many people are living in vans specifically because of reasons like the shortage of affordable housing. And there are other areas of the country like Falmouth in the southwest or Glastonbury in Somerset that are seeing these van encampments cropping up. Come with us to Brighton, 165 miles away.
This coastal city is also seeing growing numbers of vans and caravans. We come to the edge of South Downs National Park.
This is my diesel heater. Usually there's a top over it, but I took it off so I can monitor the diesel.
Steve, a retired bus and truck driver, demonstrates how he stays warm. This tiny space is home. A space he shares with his companion, rescue dog Scooby.
I collect rainwater in there. When it rains, that fills up, so I use that for, you know, washing the plates and everything. Like, I collect rainwater here because the rain runs off here as well. So I collect rainwater as much as possible. Keep my rubbish clean and tidy in there. And take the rubbish down to the recycling bin whenever we need to. Come on, come on, come and say hello.
He's got Scooby for company, but with arthritis in both knees, living like this is getting harder.
Every day I think, you've survived another day. So yeah, if you can try and have a good day, it's fantastic. If you try and have a good day.
I notice you use the word survive. Are you surviving?
I mean, everybody's surviving, really, aren't they? You know, everybody survives day by day.
Are you happy?
As happy as you could be in a situation like this.
And Steve isn't alone here. Next door, we hear dogs alongside the noise of the road. Inside, Steve's friend, Ellen. A grandmother burning logs to keep herself warm. On the far side, her dog watches over her. Her bed takes up most of the space. Her reason for living like this is hard to hear.
My child died a few years ago and I became very unwell. And I just needed to be somewhere out of things to try and deal with my bereavement. Which I've done for several years, but now I'm trying to get back into a house. But because of the housing shortage and the demands that the estate agents put on you, I found it incredibly difficult. So I feel like the people who live in vehicles, we're part of the homeless problem. I think your child dying is probably about the worst that can possibly thing that can happen to you. So a lot of people who live like me have had mental issues due to the stresses of their life.
The pair have been trying to get into a house together for over a year now. Their savings, though, are simply not enough.
I couldn't get on the mortgage because I never had enough money to do that. The barrier is they want a certain amount of income And like the one place we went to, they were asking for £40,000 a year income. Well, both of us combined with our pensions, we don't make that. We can't make that threshold.
And without this money, their way out is hard to see.
Ellen and Steve are both living in a van, but for them, there's just no alternative. They simply can't get a house. Between 75 and 100 people are living like this here in Brighton, and many of them for the same reasons. But in some cases, it's causing conflict.
A few miles away, some of these vehicles have been here for months. This one, fitted with a tarpaulin to create its own relative privacy. Its huge solar panels are instantly noticeable. Even our cameras will be captured on camera. And if that caravan is visible, this one is audible. The quiet street interrupted by its generator's steady, rhythmic hum.
So how are you feeling about these vans being on the side of the road?
Well, we're upset and concerned. As you can probably hear, this one's got a generator running all day and most of the night.
Yeah. Neil's home overlooks these vehicles. He's heading a local action group to get them moved on.
I've found over the last week there's been two separate occasions where I've found bags on the football pitch full of human excrement. And without going into too much details, it's undoubtedly human excrement. This is a school fence for a primary school. My neighbours up here have seen the van inhabitants urinating up against the fence. Primary school. So it's just not acceptable. None of this is acceptable.
We don't know if any of the van dwellers are responsible for the waste Neil describes, but it's clear the mere presence of the vehicles is causing controversy.
The residents here are very tolerant, but, you know, everyone has their breaking point.
A point, it seems, now reached by everyone.
I would suggest to him that maybe he actually bothered to talk to us as real human beings and actually got to understand our position. I would say that most of the people who live like me don't really want to upset anybody. We're trying really hard not to do that.
I've worked all of my life from the age of 12 years old, so I've never asked for anything from the government. Now I've got my pension and that's it. So, you know, anybody that says, oh, you shouldn't be living like that. Okay, well, you know, like I said, get your checkbook out, write a nice check, buy us a nice piece of land, or donate us a house, or shut your mouth. Simple as that.
It's okay, Monty. It's a good boy.
Except the path facing Ellen and Steve is anything but. Not quite homeless, but certainly houseless. Home to some, hated by others, these small lodgings are divisive. And with divisive, we found, comes defiance.